Okay, our next paper is given by Jim Skinner. His co-author is Lisa Gaddis, and the title of his presentation is Systematic Lunar Geologic Mapping Results from Copernicus Quadrangle.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to thank Bill and Dave for holding this session, first of all, and also encouraging me to submit a paper. Right when they had emailed, I kind of racked my brain a little bit to see what topic would be most appropriate in regards to kind of rejuvenated lunar geologic mapping. And I felt what was best was kind of an overview, and I think fits really well with what's been presented so far today, especially Scott Mest. So what I'm going to do is kind of take a step back a little bit and look at more of the methodological results more than scientific approaches, and they kind of overlap a little bit. But we're going to take a step back and look at the things that we're doing as far as systematic mapping, what that means, and what stratigraphy kind of falls out of that and what that means. So let's move to number one here. So the outline of the talk is, at first I'm going to talk about just give an introduction, a brief introduction to the rationale and the goals for a rejuvenation of lunar and a systematic lunar geologic mapping. I'm going to review the Copernicus Quadrangle in kind of a stratigraphic sense and a geologic sense. I'll look at past geologic maps and also current data sets and methods that have been most appropriate for identifying the stratigraphic and geologic relationships, and then look at the pilot mapping results and observations. And again, this is going to be more of a qualitative type of thing where we take a step back and look at what we are seeing as far as the goals and the kind of the caveats of looking at systematic geologic mapping. So pilot mapping derived approaches for efficient representation of geology and stratigraphy. So by way of introduction, the rationale here for rejuvenated lunar geologic mapping, as some people have kind of alluded to, Scott talked a little bit about as well, and I appreciate that, there's obviously a renewed interest in lunar exploration. USGS has historically kind of shouldered some of the responsibilities for creating the context, and that's geologic mapping and stratigraphic context, for investigations of the moon. And that could be in a regional sense, it could also be in a local sense. So we're kind of picking that up a little bit and moving with it now that we have renewed interest in exploring the moon and hopefully going back there. We have improved geodetic control and digital environments with which we can integrate all these data sets and actually analyze them. We have multiple data sets that people have presented today. It's really good. And then also interpretational context for analysis. That's what geologic maps provide. That's what stratigraphic context provides. That's what we're interested in getting at here. So just sample from the Copernicus Quadrangle, lunar orbiter. These are mixed band ratios from Clementine. And these are derived data sets. These are kind of three different things that we look at. Not the only things that we look at, but three different kinds of data sets that we look at. Lunar orbiter, Clementine, and then what people have used as derived products. This happens to be just FEO products. So data sets are pretty important here, and it's important to note that it takes a long time to get data sets in order where they are both together in space and also together in a geologic environment. It's kind of a really important thing here. This is out of a geologic mapping book, and I thought this was pretty interesting because what we've noticed and seen today is that these are lunar orbiter strips, and they have to be tied together both vertically and horizontally. And that's an important thing. And it's an important thing for geologic mapping. It's also an important thing for taking those geologic maps and going back to the moon so that we know where we are. These are important steps, and they're not trivial. They take a long time. So critical, they take a long time, and it's something that we've been working on doing. Do some of the background so that when people start applying for funds to do geologic maps, that we have some precedents that are in place that have been reexamined and that we feel are good precedents for kind of moving forward with lunar geologic mapping. So the goals of geologic mapping is obviously to explore the strengths and caveats of our tactics, look at the data sets and methods, what the caveats are of those methods, and how can we refine them to move in a progressive and kind of forward-thinking method, begin redefining and defining USGS precedents. And this is an important aspect of what we're doing, is kind of looking at where we came from and where we need to go. And this is kind of data set-driven. It's also scale-driven, as I'll touch on a little bit later on. One of the main things, too, is that we want to promote collaboration. The lunar geologic mapping folks that are doing lunar and also just planetary geologic mapping, have a lot of information that they can provide to other people. And so what we wanted to do was get together geologic mappers with people that are spectroscopists, people that are doing other kinds of work, and bring these folks together so that they can collaborate with one another and we can produce better products. So just a quick overview here. The Copernicus Quadrangle is outlined here. This is smaller. This is a larger area than the 1 to 1 million scale geologic map that was produced in, I think, 67 by Schmidt et al. This is on, obviously, the lunar near side. Here's Copernicus. Here's Eratosthenes. And this is the rim of Imbrian Basin. This was an important area that Jean Shoemaker was looking at because it contained three kind of temporal areas and critical areas to look at as far as lunar materials and how they overlap in time. Happens to be right in the middle of the lunar near side and happens to be really focused in one area. It's a nice place to look. Past geologic maps include 44 LAC maps. Those are astronomical charts. At 1 to 1 million scale, based on telescopic observations, so various telescopic observations. Schmidt et al., as I mentioned, was the 1967 1 to 1 million scale geologic map that took some of Eugene Shoemaker's previous work and kind of adapted it to a USGS publication. It was compiled later on into a 1 to 5 million scale map by Wilhelms, Wilhelms and Macaulay, 1971, and that is represented right here. So this is a copy of the map, just to show you what we're looking at. Obviously, Copernicus crater is presented here in the front. This is Eratosthenes, and you can see just barely some of the materials that make up the southern rim of the Imbrian Basin. There are of interest the Copernican materials that are about 10 materials that are crater materials or crater facies that kind of grade through horizontal, not in time, but grade from one thing to another as far as the facies go. Those are replicated here with Eratosthenes. One thing to note is that these are unrayed or rayless craters, and Copernicus is a rayed crater, and that's kind of one of the differentiations between something that is Copernican in age and something that is not or older than Copernicus. So we have about 10 materials that, or facies that make up Copernicus crater, about 9 that go with Eratosthenes, the Procolarum group, which is some of these mare materials that's in the background, some dome materials that go with the Procolarum group, and the Fra Mauro formation, which is interpreted to be ejected from the Imbrian Basin. This is I don't want you to look at this and go back and say, well, Jim Skinner showed me a map that doesn't look anything like a USGS map. This is important. I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but this is an intermediate product, and we went through a system where we kind of did some blind mapping, produced an intermediate product, and then kind of went around to the backside and started incorporating in some of the old geologic maps. So we wanted to do the first product or the first cut by saying that we want to do something that is kind of blind. We don't want to look at the old geologic maps and rely on them. We want to be able to look at the stratigraphic relationships with new data sets. We want to be able to look at all of these things together and then see what we come up with and then refine that as we move through time using older data sets. So the main thing to take away here is that obviously this is a larger area. The systematic mapping that we're going with is 1 to 2.5 million scale. I'll talk a little bit about that in a couple of slides. But you can see here that Copernicus, Eratosthenes. This is the Apennine Bench in Montes Apenninus, Montes Carpatus. And this is the eastern edge of the Aristarchus Plateau, as has been presented in the past couple of talks. So 1 to 2.5 million scale, which is different than, obviously, 1 to 1 million scale. And those kind of changes are going to be important as we move through and develop some of the tactics that we want to use for geologic mapping. So like I said, here we wanted to take basically lunar orbiter, mix it with the Clementine data sets, both as single bands and also mixed band images, produce what we call an intermediate map. This is actually a second version map. We had a previous version that was kind of a really quick and dirty, the second one, which is an intermediate version, which kind of was the blind mapping. And then what we did was we went back to the beginning, took the geologic maps, both this one at 1 to 1 million scale and all the ones that surrounded Copernicus, took those together and started to really mix and integrate the data sets to produce a finalized product. And this is what we're in the throes of doing right now. It's a big project. It's a big project because there's lots of data. It's a big project because there's been lots of topical science studies, and we want to be able to do it in a comprehensive fashion. So it's been taking us a little bit longer than we've anticipated, but we're making good headway, and I'm really pleased with where we stand right now. For our mapping, we're using, like I said, lunar orbital 4 base maps, 100 meters per pixel, Clementine, UVVIS, and NIR. as well as some derived data sets. That's titanium maps, some iron maps, and some optical maturity maps. The methods are just your basic standard mapping methods. It's using digital environments, which is a good thing. Now we have digital products. We want to use a digital environment. Doing pilot mapping studies, and that includes progressing through this and going around, so it's an iterative process. We want to contrast past maps in this iterative process, use a 1 to 2.5 million scale mapping systematic scheme, and then in the end we want to produce a geologic map, but that's not necessarily the most important product. One of the most important products is the guidelines that come out of that, and those can be digital guidelines in the form of GIS and metadata suggestions, as well as methodologies and what works best and what doesn't work so good. So a summary of the results so far, I'm going to kind of breeze through this because, like I said, what I want to get to is more of a list of the things and suggestions that we found as we've gone through this this procedure. So summary of results, Copernicus pilot map results, we have 38 geologic units as it stands right now. That's about equivalent to the Schmidt et al. Map from 1967. This is 2.5 million scale. There's a 1 to 1 million scale. We have a larger area, but obviously we can't map to the detail that they were able to do just because of the scale differences. So we have less detailed Copernican and Erasisthenian crater units. So we include both interior and exterior units. We subdivided some highland terrains and some Mare Imbrium deposits. Applied more diversified structural and topographical symbols. And that's an important point as well. We've adapted the correlation map units, so when we move through and go back to the front, go back to the back and start integrating all of the geologic maps together, we start comparing what's the correlation of map units. It's basically the column of materials and how they relate to one another in time and also in space. So we kind of adapted what was done before and didn't throw it out, but we kind of adapted what we've done with what's been done before and produced a new correlation of map units. And like I said, the iterative process here was really, really important. We finalized and released a version 1 map template, which was an important component of what we wanted to do. These are GIS map templates and suggestions, and we anticipate the geologic map and draft handbook around LPSC time of next year. We're still wondering whether we want to do this as a USGS SIM, this is equivalent to an IMAP, or we want to do a USGS open file report, maybe a combination of both. So, pilot mapping results and observations. This is kind of the bulk of what I want to present. There's several slides here. I'll kind of move through them relatively quickly. I listed 10 in the abstract, and so I kind of cherry-picked from those what I thought was the most important. In some cases, I combined a couple of them. The main thing was to, for number one, was to look at the 1 to 2.5 million scale and to see if that was worth doing instead of a 1 to 1 million scale or something else. What we found is that it was highly functional. Digital images and mapping environments support systematic map schemes and scales adaptable to less restrictive than predecessors. What this is meaning is that we can produce a production scale map at 1 to 2.5 million scale while using data sets that are really high resolution data sets and produce them as well in GIS compatible digital formats. So you basically have a something that's not scale dependent. Production is at 2.5 million scale, but we have digital products that are almost at 250,000 scale, and that's a good thing. Wilhelms in 1972 suggested this scale for mapping is an ideal scale, obviously based on past data sets. We wanted to try this out, and what we found, like I said, is it's highly functional and efficient. 100 meter per pixel lunar orbital four mosaic, that was our base mosaic. That was the most important one that we wanted to get at. We've been streaming in a GIS at 1 to 250,000 scale. That's 250 meters per vertex spacing. That's about 2.5 pixels based on the map scale resolution or the base map resolution per separation. We're also using a lot of data sets here. This is a scaled from, this is 2.5 million scale, obviously not on the screen, but 2.5, and relative to that, this is 250,000 scale map, so you can see the separation of sizes. Another thing that we've been able to do is to look in and take some of these lunar orbiter very high and high resolution frames, and what they do is they allow you to, they're not mappable, but we are able to describe some of the features that we see and use them into unit descriptions and unit correlations. So number two, spectral and morphometric information help refine unit boundaries and also unit descriptions, but they don't necessarily change the units themselves, the history, or the stratigraphy. This is a pretty important point, is to say that the work that's been done in the past is holding together really, really well. Obviously, there's some refinements in how we describe units. There's going to be refinements in how we position them in a correlation of map units, but they're holding together really well, and I think that's a really big thumbs up to people who have done work in the past. We'll refine it and we'll massage it a little bit, but we don't want to throw that away and start over. These are really good data sets to begin with. Number three, facies names for crater materials on surface morphology is highly effective to use. At one point, I wanted to kind of get rid of this and move in a direction that was more not using facies names or using morphologic names. For Mars and for Venus, that works pretty well. There's some reasons that we can go into why that might be a prudent thing to do. For the Moon, it seems to be that because there's so many crater materials, that those are really the critical things we want to get at. We want to use those facies names and really keep it the way it has been structured in the past. So again, we're going to take what's been done in the past as far as unit delineations, describe them in a more robust fashion, and then also place them in a correlation of map units that's a little more pertinent based on the data sets and scale that we're mapping at. This is just a spin on, this is what was presented in 1967 based on the 1-to-1 million scale mapping. This is what has been done more recently with planetary maps, particularly for Mars and Venus. This is far less effective, presenting these things in a correlation of map units, than this way. This is a really efficient and unique way of printing it, presenting this information directly from terrestrial geology. It's really important and good. So we're going to adapt these kinds of two things together and present more of a hybrid, using, where necessary, some of these other features for correlation of map units. Volcanic materials are more easily identifiable and describable using new data sets than they were with telescopic observations, as well as just the lunar orbiter 4 data. So that's a good thing as well to point out here. These were mapped before as chain craters as possibly being volcanic in origin. What we're seeing now is that they're probably more of impact crater, secondary crater origin from Copernicus crater. And number five, a little bit out of time here, but I want to point out this last point here, is that USGS has precedents, and precedents are defined this way because they are important to propagate. Now, we're not trying to preach to people and tell people how to do things. What we want to do is guide and instruct. In this case, we're looking at symbologies and cross-sections to properly convey stratigraphic characteristics. Symbologies are important, how you represent topographical symbols, how you represent contacts, that sort of thing. Cross-sections are also very critical, and we've kind of deviated away from that, especially in Mars mapping, so we want to kind of migrate back to the way things were done in a prior fashion and get back to kind of the nitty-gritty details of geological mapping. This is from Wilhelm's book. It's basically saying, what is stratigraphy and what are the guiding principles for geologic mapping? You can kind of take a look at that if you like, and let's see if, again... So anyway, summarizing our 4 points here, and I want to go just in conclusion to say the main thing is that Apollo-era geologic maps retain critical geologic and stratigraphic value. They're well-developed and apply terrestrial precedents. What we want to do is take some new data sets and refine those precedents and kind of move in a new direction, not entirely abandoning where we've come from, but providing something that's a new product and new guidelines for people who are interested in doing kind of systematic geologic mapping. Thank you.
Questions? Really? All right, one sort of scientific